The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu.
Now on view at Skadfesh, Manish Arora's Life is Beautiful. Renowned for dazzling designs in a rainbow of colors, Manish Arora has brought the talent and craftsmanship of India's rich sartorial history to the global forefront, earning international acclaim on runways across three continents. Designing in India since the 1990s, Arora's glittering garments celebrate extravagant expressions of self through varied materials, techniques, and silhouettes in a triumphant union of Western and Eastern aesthetics adapted to today's multicultural society with a touch of humor. Find out more at scadfesh.org.
From WABE in Atlanta, this is City Lights. I'm Lois Reitzes. Thank you for listening. Praise This is a new Peacock movie starring Chloe Bailey about a young woman with dreams of being a pop superstar. When she grudgingly enters the competitive world of Atlanta's gospel praise team choirs, she discovers meaning and fulfillment. Later this hour, producer Summer Evans speaks with one of the lead actors, Janora McDuffie, who came to the role with personal experience in praise team choir competitions. Plus, we'll celebrate AAPI Month with Mrs. Young-Hae Kim. She founded K-Wave Outreach to preserve and promote traditional Korean culture through music and art. First, when Science Gallery Atlanta opened last May, a new Emory University development joined a global network of outreach-oriented science communicators as part of Science Gallery International. Now the organization is presenting Justice, a comprehensive exhibition at Pullman Yards, exploring the interactions between societies and the systems that influence lives in sometimes conspicuous, sometimes nearly invisible ways. The show is on view through September 30th, and will be accompanied by several additional public programs this year. Joining me now via Zoom is the creative producer, interim director of Science Gallery Atlanta, and Justice exhibition curator, Floyd Hall. Floyd, welcome back to City Lights.
Hello, Lois. It's a pleasure to be with you again.
Justice is a word that means many things to many people. Can you give us a sense of the scope of this Justice exhibition and how its presentations are organized?
Sure. Lois, the central question of this exhibition is, what is justice? Justice is a concept that people for many, many years before this exhibition and many years after this exhibition will be engaged in their own different ways. And so I think for us at Science Gallery Atlanta, we are focused on convening a lot of thought and creativity and research that centers justice from a variety of perspectives, including food access, housing, public infrastructure, city planning, labor practices, criminal justice, and the environment. And we're reaching out to our local communities and elevating the concerns and ideas of Atlanta to a global platform and centering the ideas in a perspective that hopefully translates across time zones and timelines, if you will. And so for us, we are holding space for a range of justice topics, but really we're asking people to be imaginative and consider what is justice. I think so often we are considering injustices that happen, and rightfully so. I think we are right to want to address the things that go wrong, but how do we also hold space to imagine the worlds that we want to live in a way that is thriving and lush and in harmony?
Mm-hmm. We're living through what feels, for many of us, a truly precarious moment for American democracy, partly related to political effort to make voting difficult. Gerrymandering is an example. How does this show at Pullman Yards explore ways that political systems disrupt systems of governance, especially those that involve accountability and representation?
Lois, there are two projects that come to mind in this exhibition that highlight that, one at a national level and one in a very Atlanta-specific way. For one of our larger installations in this exhibition, we've partnered with Four Freedoms, which is an artist-run advocacy organization. They presented a project called 50 Billboards in 50 States, and we have presented the artwork and some of the locations of that artwork in this exhibition. And that project gives us a chance to see how voices in local communities around the country are advocating for different policies and different agency in their communities. In a local sense, there's a project in the Justice exhibition called Lightning Struck, which highlights the saga of the neighborhood of Lightning and that neighborhood and the residents of that neighborhood, and in terms of their interaction between state and local agencies to preserve itself. And so what that project shows us, one is that it shows us the communication and the agency and the attempts to foster more political power for residents of communities. But also it shows us, I think, what can happen when there's an imbalance in that political power. And so I don't want to spoil it for you, but I want people to explore that particular piece and understand what it may be showing us for today.
The part of the exhibition that focuses on the neighborhood of Lightning, that area was displaced to make way for the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Would you share with us the story of Lightning and how its history was interrupted by this stadium project?
Sure. So I think it's important to point out that whenever we see large-scale projects in a downtown area or within a metro city limit footprint, there's a good chance that there are some people who were living there at one point. And so if you begin to think about that, then I think that maybe that could invite people to imagine who might have lived there. And so Lightning is the neighborhood that, as you mentioned, Lois, used to sit on the land that currently is occupied by Mercedes-Benz Stadium and previously the Georgia Dome, as well as the World Congress Center. And Lightning was a thriving neighborhood at one point early in its development in the early 1900s. And through a series of events from redlining to some city planning to just, I think, the evolution of how our city was wanting to define itself, this neighborhood ultimately became erased. And so I think if we begin to look at other cities as well as other neighborhoods in the Atlanta area, that's not a rare occurrence. And so I hope that when visitors see this project, that they begin to reflect on other large-scale projects, other communities, but also reflect on moments in our history where communities were able to preserve themselves, and what were the differences in those scenarios as opposed to lightning.
Yeah. If you are just joining us, this is City Lights on WABE. I'm Lois Reitzes, and my guest is curator Floyd Hall. We're discussing the new exhibition, Justice, on view at Pullman Yards through the end of September. Floyd, who are some of the contributing researchers, artists, and other guests that helped to create the components of this show?
Well, I'm very excited to feature the work of Dr. Eri Saikawa, who works in the space of environmental science at Emory University. Eri has done a tremendous amount of work on the west side of Atlanta in doing lots of soil testing and getting the word out about the health of our environment in the Atlanta area. And so we're featuring some of Eri's work in this exhibition. I'm also very excited to feature some of the work through collaboration of Dr. Kay Levine from Emory Law. Kay was very helpful in advising on a project called A Just Sentence, which puts visitors in the role of a judge having to administer sentencing in different scenarios. I'm also very excited about perhaps the most eye-catching piece in the show, which is a MARTA bus that was designed, the aesthetic was designed by artist Sanit Nafonzavan with the input of Dr. Emily Birchfield from Emory University as well. I would also add to that, there is a prominent piece in this exhibition by Stephanie Brown, an artist. But Stephanie was a member of the Emory University Arts and Social Justice Fellows Program. And so her work really amplifies the intent of that program and other folks at Emory University as we think about the intersection of art, social justice, and academia. And so those are a handful of projects that I think are really important and contributors in terms of this exhibition. Oh, and I don't know if I mentioned the title of Stephanie's work. It's called Seesaw. So if you consider the scales of justice and Lady Justice and thinking about balance, Seesaw will really resonate with you.
You mentioned the MARTA bus. Transportation access is a critically important aspect of social justice, and yet progress on the issue is often hindered. How does transportation figure into the discussion the Justice Exhibition facilitates?
Lois, we live in a metro area that continues to sprawl. And imagine living in, let's say, Henry County and getting your dream job in Cobb County, but you don't have a car. How are you closing that gap, both literally and figuratively? So when we consider what public transit or just public infrastructure means to the mobility in our communities, and when we think about how that mobility or fostering mobility is a form of justice, then I think inviting MARTA and inviting this bus into the exhibition space provides a really great platform to unpack a lot of that. And beyond just the mobility factor of public transit, we're also thinking about the environmental side of that. And in terms of the amount of cars that we have on the road, and how do we just foster more effective ways to move people throughout this space, but with respect to our environment as well. And so when we consider the importance of transit, I think that this exhibition tries to center that not only from getting from point A to point B, but also helping us to imagine the type of world that we really want and how transit plays a role in that. And so I think the exhibition and this particular project called Destinations invites viewers to really get imaginative around the world that they want, the community that they want when it comes to transit and public infrastructure.
There's so much room for progress and excitement in that area, connecting people more. Earlier, you noted the Emory researcher whose work was in soil testing. Food insecurity is a huge problem in the United States and frequently underplayed in national politics, when so often we hear about similar problems in third world countries, but no mention of our own. What does the Justice exhibition reveal about the movement for food justice?
Okay, I will be fully transparent and say that my favorite project in this show, from a design standpoint, is a project called Seed Cabinet. And the artist and the developer of this work, Kateri Gladys, who is from Florida, repurposed an old card catalog from the library, if you imagine going back in your memory banks. But this project brings us closer to the food and the people that grow our food as a form of food justice and helping us orient or reorient how we get our food. Atlanta is a great restaurant town. We love our food, but sometimes we may not relate to where it actually comes from and where we have some agency to play a role in that. And so I think with Seed Cabinet, we're trying to reconnect people with not just where food comes from, but where they have the agency to grow their own, or to at least understand where we have local sources of amazing food.
As curator, Floyd, what is your hope for visitors' takeaway from this exhibition in terms of individual empowerment and how we can see ourselves contributing parts of larger systems?
Lois, with every exhibition I am fortunate enough to contribute to, I always want visitors to feel something. That's the first thing. Do you feel something? Do you feel compelled? Do you feel moved? And within this show, I want people to feel moved to, one, see their current community differently. As you leave the exhibition, I would hope that you would begin to see housing differently, public transit differently, food sources differently, the environment differently, all within a local context. Beyond that, I would want you to feel compelled to act and feel compelled to connect to Atlanta-based organizations that are doing amazing work in these spaces. We are presenting some of those throughout the programming of the exhibition, but I would want people to feel compelled to act and then compelled to contribute. One of my favorite pieces in the show is a community data studio that is being run by Georgia Tech professor Carl DeSalvo. And it really invites members of the public to redefine the important aspects of their neighborhoods. So many times the data that gets collected is top down. It's median household income or age demographics or crime rates. But very rarely do we allow for the people of a community to decide what is the important data that they want known and shared about where they live. And so for this exhibition, I just really hope that people, again, feel moved, feel compelled to act and to connect and to offer up the things that they want from their communities, and then allow that to ripple into other spaces and beyond.
Science Gallery Atlanta opened its doors just in May of 2022. Will you tell us more about the role of Science Gallery Atlanta in the global science gallery network?
Sure. We are still a baby. We are just a year old. And so it's amazing that this year has passed so quickly. But one of the things I like to remind people is that everywhere is global, depending on where you are. Atlanta as a global city is always in conversation with the rest of the world. And so through Science Gallery International, we are able to be part of a network that allows our researchers and our artists to contribute information, data, expertise throughout the world, throughout this entire network. And so Science Gallery International comprises of several other arts spaces that are connected with universities. So you have this amazing pool of researchers and subject matter experts located in thriving cultural centers. And so I think that it's only right that Atlanta be presented alongside of London or Berlin or Melbourne in other cities. And so that's really what our purpose is to advance the thought, advance the art, but really emphasize this public dissemination of science to the world and highlighting our amazing artists who helped to make that happen.
That was Floyd Hall, curator of Science Gallery Atlanta's Justice exhibition, on view at Pullman Yards through September 30th. More information is on our website, wabe.org/citylights. In a moment, producer Summer Evans catches up with actor Janora McDuffie from the musical comedy film Praise This. Amplifying Atlanta, this is WABE.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Support for WABE comes from 100 Miles, a nonprofit committed to preserving Georgia's 100-mile coast. Protecting this critical coastal ecosystem takes all of us. Watch the stories of the innovators and future leaders who help keep our coast flowing at OurGeorgiaCoast.org.
This is City Lights on WABE. I'm Lois Reitzes. Great to have you along. The new Peacock movie, Praise This, takes the phrase singing for Jesus to a whole new level. The film stars Chloe Bailey as Sam, a young woman who shipped off to Atlanta by her father to straighten out her life. She moves in with her Aunt Liz, Uncle Larry, and Cousin Jessica, and ends up joining their church's praise team choir in hopes of getting the attention of music producers. While preparing for the national competition, Sam decides to reevaluate her life and open up to new possibilities. Janora McDuffie, who portrays Aunt Liz, recently joined City Lights producer Summer Evans, and the actor explained that she came to the role with personal experience in choir competitions.
Believe it or not, I actually was on a gospel choir team when I was in high school.
No way.
I sure was. We competed in the Quaker Oats National Gospel Choir Competition. And our secret trick at the time is we sang a song all in sign language. So, and clearly the level of competition has risen, but I was very familiar with the field. I'm just so blown away at how much it has evolved since.
So the betrayal of the movie, would you say, is pretty accurate to how choir competitions are today?
Well, like I said, this was back in high school, and not that high school did not have its field of characters and villains, but I think since Chuck's 20 years ago, the music has changed quite a bit, definitely more contemporary, definitely more show-stopping performances. But in terms of the feel behind the scenes, it definitely was there, I guess, especially with competing choirs that come year after year and always expected to win. I don't think mine was quite in that category. Shout out to Colors. That was the name of our competing choir. And believe it or not, it was from the North Carolina School of Science and Math. So the STEM magnet school had a competing gospel choir. So can't always judge a book by its cover.
No. Wow. I would have never guessed that.
Yeah, most people don't.
For people that haven't seen a choir competition, how would you describe it?
It's so exciting. I've never seen one as a fan. I've only seen one as a competitor, but it's just so exciting to be there. And I really will say there is an air of something greater. And that's probably because the content we're singing about. We are singing about the good Lord. We are singing about positivity and coming together. Now, granted, again, we are all human beings and fall short. And sometimes the competition gets the best of some folks and they forget what they're singing for and who they're singing about. But I will say that there is definitely an air of, yeah, something positive happening within the competition. And I definitely think that the film, you get the sense of that as well, that it's more than just singing and the show choir and outfits and flipping songs. It's really something greater that is the interwoven thread throughout the full film.
Right. I did think it was interesting the songs that they changed that were modern day, like hip hop rap songs, into gospel songs. You know, that is definitely an interesting concept that I was unfamiliar with. I didn't know if back in the day when you did competitions, would y'all change the words of modern songs that may be about things that aren't necessarily PG, but changing it for the Lord?
You know what? I, again, came along where we thought we were doing something fancy because we were doing it in sign language. What has transpired since is really phenomenal. And I would like to say, in terms of my knowledge of gospel music and evolution, I think about Kirk Franklin and how he made a lot of contemporary songs. And some people, or even a group like Mary Mary. And I remember the resistance of certain church folks who thought it was just too racy for the Lord. But I feel like if there's any way to bring additional people to listen with an open heart to something greater, including making the songs a bit more contemporary, I say good for you. And I really think that's a great angle and feeling that you get from this film.
Give it to them, let them do it, ain't no pressure. Anything you might be going through, don't let it press you. Pray on it, stay on it, ain't no pressure. Gotta make a way and a way if you believe it. So if God is for you, then why you even stressing? It's already yours, so won't you go and get your blessing? Eyes to the heavens, you don't need to doubt. With God on your side, you will never go without. If God can make the trees.
And so I had never seen it to the point of, for example, the song in the trailer. It was the flipped A. Marie song to Fred Hammond's Blessed. So, wow, I love both songs and could never think about how you would put them together. But that is just one example of a soundtrack to this film that is just full of magical bangers for the Lord.
Na, 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 oh. Yeah. Na, 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 oh.
okay, this is a movie about a praise team choir competition. Some people might think, oh, it sounds kind of old school, but by changing the lyrics for these songs and making it so modernized, it really brings a fresh new perspective to what this movie's about.
Yes.
You know, that has me thinking about how Black gospel music can be traced to the hymnals of early 19th century. Regarding this film and how there's a lot of Black gospel music and modernized music that is very important to the Black community, what ways do you feel that gospel music and everything that it's rooted in is important to the Black community today?
Oh, man. So tracing it back, yeah, they would put messages of meeting places to escape for freedom in these hymnals. So it has got some serious roots, and just the Black church itself became a center of not just praising the Lord, but getting together as a community to figure out how to collectively fight the power. And so I feel like the roots of Black church and Black church music go way back and are rooted in so much more than just praise. I feel like today, man, it's a tougher road because of so many other, well, you know what, Summer, I'll be honest. I feel like sometimes we, as in human beings, are the toughest example for finding the Lord. For example, some of the worst folks out there call themselves Christians in the church. So I can understand how some people might be like, yeah, that sounds old school, or I don't know if it's for me. That's why I think this film is so needed now, because again, it brings an audience that might not normally take to this type of material on paper, but you see it on the screen and you really relate to Sam's story and Sam's journey, or you feel the music in a way you've never felt it before. I do think it opens hearts and minds. So it is definitely needed in a day like today, 2023, and all of the division that we are experiencing. And I feel like something greater is a common foundation that we can all unite behind and for. So yay, praise this.
And it does show so many different characters. It's not just, even the people that are in the church, it shows that they're flawed and that they're still working through those issues. And Sam comes in and she's like, you know, I'm not really a believer myself, and was very apprehensive to the way of life, but it shows her working through things. It shows that the people that are already Christians in the church are still working through things. You know, it shows that humanity side of it.
Absolutely. And I think that's what's needed, because the version of someone being perfect, what is that? That does not exist. And then it becomes dangerous when you see the hypocrisy in that, and you aren't attracted to something like that. But to see real characters like PG, like the pastor himself, and like his beautiful wife, who had her own journey and is singing in her own club. These are images that are positive and needed in this new world that we're in, trying to find our way.
Well, speaking of characters, would you tell us more about your character, Aunt Liz?
Oh, Aunt Liz. Aunt Liz is everybody's lovable aunt. She's just full of all that Southern good love and charm, and great cook, and just wants everybody to feel welcome and at home. So I think it's the perfect place for Sam, Chloe Bailey's character, to land when she comes to Atlanta, because it is a space of this unconditional love, and then also a space of a positive example of two Black parents in love. I was lovingly with Uncle Larry, in fact, maybe too lovingly sometimes, according to the kids in our home. He was played by Kendrick Cross. And together, yeah, we represented something positive and a needed representation. And sometimes, yeah, this world where you don't quite see parents together, loving parents together, and especially parents of color together.
Mm, yeah. As mentioned, Chloe Bailey stars in the film. What was it like working alongside her?
It was wonderful. Chloe is on fire. Everywhere you look, there goes Chloe Bailey, and just doing it in such a positive way on so many different fronts, whether it's music, whether it's film and TV. And so you don't know what you're going to get when you get such a big star whose time is now. But I tell you what you got. You got a really lovely human being. Chloe was really positive on set and really open and engaging. A lot of times when the director yells cut, a lot of actors go back to their corners, go back to their chairs in their green room. But Chloe was open and engaging to all the actors. I felt special in that the majority of my scenes with Chloe were at our home. Aunt Leah's Uncle Larry, our daughter Jess, played by Angelica Washington, and Chloe. So just the four of us, which was really nice. And occasionally her dad. So to have a smaller, more intimate setting in terms of working with Chloe was really nice as well. I remember a time between takes where Chloe and Angelica, again, our daughter Jess, would meditate like between a take, but not, but meditate in a way of bringing about peace and love in a set that was already full of peace and love. And I feel like when you've got positivity of that nature from the star of the show, you can't help but to feel that when you watch the movie.
Right. It just resonates.
Absolutely.
Why would you recommend this film to maybe a non-religious or secular listener?
I think there are messages and themes within the movie that transcend all of what someone would consider a church movie or a God movie. I think whether it's the love of music, whether it's the love of someone following their dream and the journey from having a dream and feeling like it's not going to come true and the things that you're willing to do to make it come true. I feel like those themes and stories, again, transcend what you might think is in a small box. But what you walk away from that is realizing that when you are listening to good music and feeling the beat and singing along, to me, that's God. Or when you are cheering someone on from a space of wanting to see them win, I think that's God. So I think it's a way that also is able to translate old school thinking of trying to put God in a box and opening that up into experiencing just positivity on different levels. But we're still talking about the same thing, just maybe using different language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it also did a great job of showcasing what is the church. You know, it's not a building, it's the people and how those people came together in different ways.
Absolutely. And for myself as a human being and real person in life as Janora McDuffie, when we walked into the oil factory set, that was the church, the first thing you saw after you belong on the front of the building, but when you entered, you saw this sign that says love wins. So to have a sign that says love wins in the church and me as a member of the LGBT plus community, I felt like Janora was welcome. And what a great feeling as an actor to work on something that in your real life fully supports and embraces. So that is also a new look and take and version of, I think, a church that needs to be seen and uplifted more than what we currently have that's dividing or putting down.
Speaking of your personal life, I did want to highlight the fact that you were last year's announcer for the 94th Academy Awards. How did it feel to be the voice of the Oscars? Was this on your bucket list?
Oh, Summer, it was not, because it just seems so far away. Like the announcer for the Oscars, wow, that's quite a job. So I was blown away when I got the opportunity to audition for the announcer role, and definitely became a dream of a lifetime when I actually got the role. And I knew that the theme of the show, shout out to Will Packer and Sheila Cowan, who were the producers, the Emmy nominated producers of that amazing program last year. The theme was they wanted to bring people back to the movies. They wanted everyone to feel welcome and that they belonged at that Oscar program and that they saw themselves and, for me, heard themselves. So I was channeling all my Aunt Liz love, Summer, all my Southern, charming, professional, open, loving, welcoming vocal cords to make sure that people heard me and felt that they belonged there. And as for announcing all the names of the winners, someone told me during my first rehearsal they said, wow, Janora, what a gift it is to be able to announce the names for the first time to the world of these people who have worked their entire lives for this moment. So when I saw my job as an act of service as like, I'm the one that gets to share the good news about what you just accomplished, that took all the pressure off. It became not about me anymore and how I sounded in terms of the pronunciation. It became, oh, wow, guess what I get to do? You just hold on tight because this name is going to come with so much excitement and joy for you. So it was just a great experience all around.
Actor Janora McDuffie speaking with City Lights producer Summer Evans. Praise This. It's available for streaming on Peacock TV. And if you want to attend a Praise Team competition, you are in luck. The gospel music competition, How Sweet the Sound, comes to the Cobb Energy Center on June 3rd. The event includes choirs, soloists, dance ensembles, and spoken word artists competing for $20,000 in prize money. More information is on our website, wabe.org/citylights. Coming up, we'll celebrate AAPI Month with Mrs. Young Hae Kim, founder of K-Wave Outreach. Amplifying Atlanta, this is 90.1 WABE. This is City Lights on WABE. I'm Lois Reitzes. Thank you for being here. According to the 2020 census, 71,000 Korean Americans are estimated to live in Georgia, and that number has continued to increase in the past few years. Korean immigrant and founder of the Atlanta Music Academy, Mrs. Young Hae Kim, created a new nonprofit to uplift her community. K-Wave Outreach preserves and promotes traditional Korean culture through music and art. Mrs. Kim joins me now via Zoom. Welcome to City Lights.
It's my pleasure to be here, Lois.
Would you share with us how you and your family emigrated to the U.S. from South Korea?
Surely. My family of seven, there are five girls and mom and dad, came to United States in 1973 from Seoul to Atlanta directly. And I have lived in this Atlanta area since then. I have attended the Peabody Conservatory of Music in Baltimore for 4 years, but that was only 4 years of my time that was away from Atlanta. But I have lived in here for since then, 1973.
So you are clearly a proud Atlantan, and your love for music and playing the piano began at a very early age. I read that you were selected as the youngest pianist to perform with the Atlanta Symphony Youth Orchestra. What impact did that experience have on your career path?
I think tremendously. Before I moved on, when I came in 1973, we had no money. I mean, we didn't speak English very well. But I met a gentleman whose name was Mr. Jerry Wheeler, who had paid my family my private piano lessons for 3 years. Mm. Yes, and he was the one heard the WABE back then, because we didn't know what WABE was, you know, in 1974. But he heard there's an audition for the Atlanta Youth Symphony Orchestra, and he suggested I audition for it, which I did, and I got in and I was performing under the conductor Michael Palmer at the time.
Yes.
So yeah, already back then I knew that the music can touch someone's heart, and then I was able to benefit from it. So my mission now is pass on what I have received to the others. That's my mission.
What a wonderful story. And I love hearing that WABE played a role in that.
Yes.
Oh, the power of radio and music on the radio.
Yes.
So tell us, what inspired you to create the Atlanta Music Academy in 1982?
After I graduated from Peabody Conservatory, I came back to town, and I realized that there are a lot of talents in especially my community, Korean community, but did not have a source to find a good teacher at the time. So I think I was the pioneer in that field to connect the good teacher to the good students. That's what prompted me to start Atlanta Music Academy.
And why do you believe it's important for children to learn music at an early age?
I think it has immeasurable benefits and advantages to start music. First, it teaches them discipline, and also it teaches them the value of hard work. If you want to do well, I mean, just to practice just two notes or one phrase, you have to go over many, many, many times. So if you take that kind of working ethic to any field that you are in, you'll be successful. So I think it's so valuable to the young children to study music.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, please tell us why you wanted to formed the nonprofit K-Wave Outreach.
I have retired from Atlanta Music Academy officially, but I'm still the big force behind. But upon my retirement, I realized that I like to do something for the community and for the children. There are so many talented students at the school, but I like to return the talents to the community. I see a lot of violence going on, race against race. Mm. I think that all comes from not knowing each other. If you know each other, you will see there are a lot of similarities in their society. I mean, there's more similarity than differences. So if you realize there's a lot of similarities in our own cultures, then there'll be less misunderstanding. Then if you realize there's a less misunderstanding, then we'll understand each other and love each other. We can embrace all kinds of races together, and we all realize we are all connected. Yet that's my mission of creating nonprofit K-Wave Outreach.
How do you hope K-Wave will bridge the gap between older and younger generations of Koreans when it comes to learning more about Korean culture?
That's why I'm trying to educate my second generations to know. They have to know what their heritage is first. Then once they know it, then they can promote and preserve. I came with a lot of difficulties finding a music to be played by symphony orchestra. So my mission for the K-Wave is to find our folk songs and then probably make transcriptions so that a lot of our second generation who plays Western music can play those music in a full orchestra version. That's my next mission.
Wonderful.
So that it can be preserved and promoted in a year by year, not just this year, but long time. generation to generation.
So these are traditional aspects of Korean culture. Moving to pop culture, there's been a global impact with K-pop. What's your take on K-pop?
Music has to be changed as time goes on. We cannot just enjoy Bach, Beethoven, Brahms. The music has to be changed. So I am all for it. That's why we are playing BTS music in our program as well. I think we have to incorporate it. So I have created K-Wave little string ensembles. They will go out. We are not going to play in a very fancy indoor type. We'll be going out to streets, even to play for homeless people, to this BTS music or K-pop. I think any music, any type of music can touch the human soul.
Mrs. Young-hae Kim, founder of K-Wave Outreach. More information is on our website, wabe.org. You've been listening to City Lights, our daily exploration of arts and culture. Monday at 11 a.m., voting rights activist, politician, and author Stacey Abrams stops by to discuss her new thriller, Rogue Justice. Plus, the prolific Atlanta artist Peter Ferrari details his new exhibition, Covalent, on view at ABV Gallery. If you missed part of today's show, like our earlier story about Science Gallery Atlanta's Justice exhibition, you could catch up through our podcast or on our website, wabe.org/citylights. There you will find our complete archive of interviews, so you can listen to City Lights on your schedule. Our theme music is The First Time, written and performed by Joe Granston with his jazz band, courtesy of Hot Shoe Records. City Lights senior producer is Kim Drobes. Our producers are Summer Evans and Janine Etter, and our engineer is Shelley Canavy. I'm your host, Lois Reitzes. We'd love for you to connect with City Lights on social media. We're at WABE City Lights on both Facebook and Instagram. Thanks for listening to WABE Atlanta.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The world is full of mysteries. Are ghosts real? Is that yogurt expired? Hey, the unknown can be scary, but when you donate to WABE, you know where your money is going. Your gift supports the journalism that keeps you informed and the programs that pull back the curtain on complicated stories. Help us make the world less mysterious. Become a member now. Go online to wabe.org/donate, and thanks.